Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Soita Daf Mem Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that's available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 20 lines from the top of Daf Mem Ches. If you prefer, you can estimate a little more than halfway down the narrow lines of the Gemara. We are continuing with different rulings of Yochanan Kohen Gadol that we saw already in the Mishnah. It mentioned there, Bitel Aviafhu Bitel Es Hamoirim. Yochanan Kohen Gadol stopped the Moirim. My Moirim, what is that a reference to? Omar Rachbo. Rachbo is a name. Bechol Yoim Vayoim Shohoyu Oimdim Levim Al Duchan. The Oimrim, every day the Levium would arise on the platform in the Azora. The Oimrim, Ura Lomotishan Hashem. Translated, we wake up, Almighty, why do you sleep? Omar, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, said, Omar Lohen, V'chiyesh Shino Lifnei HaMokom. Can you say that there is sleeping with regard to the Almighty? V'havlo kvar nemar, the pasuk says, Hine lo yonum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael. So by your calling out Ura lo motishan Hashem, you're creating a misunderstanding. You're suggesting something that's simply not true. So, well, but it is a pasuk. How do you resolve then the two psukim? Elo bisman Yisrael shuyin betzar ve'oivde kechovim benachas v'shalva. When the Jewish people are suffering and the idol worshippers are at peace and tranquility, l'kach nemar ura lomotishan Hashem. It's therefore a prayer to the Almighty to arouse and defend the glory of the Jewish people. But not to suggest for one second that there's an allusion here to the Almighty going to sleep. V'es ha-noikvim. Yochanan Kohen Gadol stopped the nokvim. My nokvim, what does that involve? Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel, shoyu misartin le'egil ben karnov, kidei shiipol dam bi'enov. This is an attempt on the part of people slaughtering animals, and it seems to be in the context of sacrifices, as you'll see as we go on in the Gemara, in order to have the animal in a position where it's easy to slaughter it. So it would be the objective is to get the animal down on the ground. So what it used to be is they used to scratch the animal between its horns and cause bleeding, and the blood would fall into their eyes, and the animal would thereby lose control of himself, being confounded by the temporary loss of sight because of the blood in its eyes, and it won't stand firmly on the ground, and thereby making it easier to have the animal fall down and be in a position to slaughter it. Also, ihu botil. Yochanan Kohen Gadol came along and he stopped that practice. Mishum demechsi ki mumo, because it appears as if you're imposing a blemish in the animal, and it's forbidden for a sacrificial animal to have a blemish. B'masnisa tona, in a Tanaic source, the following is taught in this context. Shoyu choyftin oisoi b'maklois, kiderach she'oisin oisoi lifnei avidis kechavim. In order to get the animal to fall down, they would beat it with sticks, the same way idol worshippers would do so with their animals. Omar Lahem and Yochanan Kohen Gadol, seeing that that's what they practiced, he said to them, Ad Mosai Atem Machilim. Now here we have an expression that is, we have in brackets this section of Gemara because there's an inaccuracy, and the Gemara will fix it, but the final reading is, if you skip the brackets, we read Ad Mosai Atem Machilim Trefos. Trefos is explained Shemo Nikev Krum Shelmoyach, when for an animal to be acceptable as a sacrifice, and also in order to be able to eat it, it must be a non-trefa. Trefa is an animal that has an organ-type deficiency. Amongst the various deficiencies that are listed is a hole in the membrane surrounding the brain of the animal. And that's what here we're referring to, as Shemo Nikev. Nikev, word Nekev, a hole. Maybe the krum is the membrane, Shelmoach, around the brain, is penetrated by beating the animal on its head. So he said this is not an acceptable method of getting the animal down on the ground. Let's go over the bracketed section. He asked them, Ad Mosai Atem Machilim Nevelois Lamizbeach. By practicing this, you're creating a nevela. The Gemara asks, Nevelos? How can you describe it as a nevela? Nevela is an animal that died without shechita. Ha shachit luhu. They are slaughtering it. So once you slaughter an animal, it no longer can be categorized as a nevela, which is another type of prohibited meat. But it's not a nevela, ela trefos. By beating it on the head, you are creating a possible trefos situation. Shemo nikev krum shelmoyach. And therefore, omad vihiskin, he arose. That's Yochanan Kohen Gadol, arose vihiskin and established lahem tabois bekarka, rings that are attached to the ground. The animal's head, neck, would be inserted into the ring, thereby arresting the animal's movement and making it easier to slaughter it. Ad yomov hoyapatish make b'Yerushalayim. We explained this when we learned the Mishnah. It's the blacksmiths that used to conduct their craft, even on Chol HaMoed, because we do make allowances for a dover of it, type of those kind of activities, work that, if not done, would lead to a loss, one is permitted to do on Chol HaMoed. However, he felt that there was too much of a zilzal, a cheapening of Chol HaMoed, and people would hear the clanging of the hammer and not know the details that it was done because of a dover of it, because of a loss. And here the Gemara is very brief and simply says that the hammer that was heard in Yerushalayim until his day was Becholoi Shalmoid, during the intermediate days of the holiday. And he came along, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, and said, enough. And as we already explained, people are going to hear the noise, they're going to think that work is being done for profit purposes and not simply to prevent a loss. And that is a zilzal and is forbidden on Chol HaMoed. Kol yomov lo hoya adam tzorach lishol al hadamai. During his years, no one would have to ask concerning the demai kid da'amor. We explained that above. We saw that at the end of our previous shiur. So therefore, the Gemara doesn't feel any need to go over that again. We continue now with the new Mishnah, and on the side, we have a Nosei topic heading, Bitol Shira Vizimra, the stoppage of song and music. You'll see that we're using a double underline marking to indicate, just to highlight the series of events and when they had taken place. This marking scheme is actually going to be used also when we get to the Mishnah Adaf Mem Tes as well. Mishabot lo Sanhedrin, from the time that the High Court say, serving as a high court, came to an end. Botel Hashir Mibeis HaMishtos. Song from Beis HaMishtos are places where people would drink wine. So there would be no more song in those places. Shenemar Bashir Lo Yishtu Yayin V'chulei. The Gemara will ask, how do you see in this Pasuk any connection to the stoppage of the Sanhedrin? Mishem Maisu Nevi'im Horishonim Botlu Urim V'tumim. When the early prophets died, the Kohen Gadol's breastplate, which is referred to as the Urim V'tumim, stopped functioning in its up to that point miraculous fashion, where letters on the breastplate would light up or bulge forward. However, the miracle took place, but there was a miracle where questions would be asked of the Almighty while in the presence of the Kohen Gadol's breastplate, and answers would be forthcoming through the letters. That stopped with the death of the Nevi'im HaRishonim. Mishechorav Beis HaMikdash Botel HaShomir V'Noifes Sufim. These points will be elaborated on in the Gemara, but with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there was no longer the Shomir. We'll discover a certain type of creature that was able to cause rocks to split without any loss of actual material. Noifes Sufim, the Gemara has several pshatim on what that is. Uposku Anshe Amono Miyisrael. Rashi, and the two columns of Rashi, and you'll notice Rashi is in the column that would ordinarily be occupied by the Tosfos. There are no Tosfosim here. So Rashi says, Anshe Amono, what are Amono? Amono, Emuna, has to do with trustworthiness. Trusting in the Almighty, in this case, Anshe Amona, Boitchim Bakodesh Baruch Hu V'Samchon Olav, Lasos Toiv Ein Do'agin L'Chisaron. People who are so reliant and confident in the Almighty that they never had, we'll say, worries or concerns regarding income. Well, with the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, they ceased to exist. Shenemar Hoshio Hashem Ki Gomar Chosid V'chulei. Reb Shimon Omer Heid Rabbi Yeshua. That means that Rabbi Yeshua testified, Miyom Shechor of Beis HaMikdash Ein Yom She'ein Bo Klolo. With the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there isn't a day that doesn't have a curse in it. V'liyorad Hatal Levrocha. The dew, though there is dew, accumulate, doesn't fall for, let's say, for bracha purposes. Bracha is an expression referring to increase and profit. It doesn't serve its fruitful function. The nital tam haperos, and the true taste of fruits is lost. So that even if you taste a fruit nowadays that tastes good, you should realize that it's nothing as compared to what it was in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yossi Omer Af Nital Shumon HaPeros. With the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there was also the removal, the loss of the richness or the fat, the oils from fruits. Rabbi Shimon ben Elozer Omer HaTaro Notlo Es HaReach. Taro is a reference to purity, diligence in purity, matters of tara, avoidance of tuma. Well, with the when that stopped, so also the pleasant smell of fruits ceased. The Marsha explains that the tara is a spiritual, a ruchnius phenomenon, and reach is a benefit that's more of a spiritual nature. It's not. It's a type of benefit. The pasuk says, "Kol haneshama." Neshama is from the word neshima, breath or smelling. The that aspect is tahalel ko, and reach is a true. It's a pleasure, but it's not the same type of pleasure. It's not what we call a physical pleasure as eating is. So with the loss of tara, there's also the loss of this of reach. Hamaisrus notlu as shuman hadogon. Maestros is tithing, proper tithing, once it was no longer practiced. Now, tithing is food that is given to the respective beneficiaries, the Levium, the Kohanim. Well, they no longer received the tithes, and as a result of that, and tithes is physical, it's food to be eaten, with the stoppage of the maestros, so the richness of the grains also got lost, and that's a reference to something also physical. Haznus vakshofim kilus hakol, with the preponderance of immorality and kshofim is translated as witchcraft, that got rid of everything. Anything good that was left is no longer. The Gemara asks regarding the posuk b'shir lo yishtu yayin mimai de mishabot lo sanhedrin ksiv. How do you see any reference in that posuk to the stoppage, the cessation of the high court? Amar Huda, Raid of Yeshua, Yama Kra. There's a posuk that says, Zekena Mishar Shofsu Bahurim Minagin Yosam. The Zekenim are the sages, the elders, the high court. From when it is no longer, so the Bahurim Miniginosam, the young, stopped their music. So you see a relationship between the stoppage of the high court and the stoppage of music. Omar Rav, Udno Deshoma Zimro Te'alker, the ear that hears music should be uprooted. Omar Rava Zamro Babesa Churba Basifa, if there's song in one's house, there's song and music in one's house, so there is destruction on Basifa means the threshold of the house. Shenemar Koyul Yishorer B'chalon Chorev Basaf Ki Orzo Eira. When there's a kol yeshoreh, when there's music, so there's chorev, a lashon of churban, an expression of destruction, basaf, at the threshold of the house. Mai ki orza eira, omer of Yitzhak, v'chibayis ha-mesubach ba'arozim ir hu. The explanation of the pasuk, if you look at it literally, it would seem to reflect upon a house that's roofed with Mesukoch is maybe a better girsa than Mesukoch from Lashon Schach. A covering means that the rafters of the house are made with erez. Erez is a type of wood used as a building material. Is a house that's covered with arozim ear? Is it a city? The Pasuk said a ra, like the word ear, a city. Ela, so what is the explanation? Ela afilu bias ha Mesukoch be'arozim, even a house that is, let's say, is well built, mis ro'ea, becomes shaky and will collapse. So the word eira is a lotion of ro'ua, something shaky, something that will fall apart. Omar Rav Ashi, Shma Mino, ki maschil churba. So we conclude from here that when destruction sets in, besifa maschil, it starts from the threshold. From the threshold of the house, from its openings, Shenemar, the pasuk said, Chorev Basaf, V'boiseimo Mehocha. Another source for this is Ushiya Yukas Shar. Shar is the gate of the house, and Shia is an expression referring to destruction. Destruction affects initially the entrance, the house of the house. As we've said on numerous occasions in recent Shurim, there are probably, you can see here, there's a reference to something that's of a deeper nature, and we're getting from the Gemara here something that appears symbolic. But what is the significance? What does entrance of houses represent on a deeper level? If one were to discover that, one will appreciate this idea that destruction sets in over there. We continue in the Gemara. Omar Mor Baravashi, Ledidi Chazi Lei. I saw that in reference to the Pasuk we just read, Ushia Yukas Shar, the Pasuk refers to, we mentioned the expression of destruction, but it's also, there's a reference here to demons that are destructive. And Rav Ashi says, I saw that demon, and it umenageach kitura, and it gores like an ox. Again, something that's presented here in a symbolic level, but for those who understand the deeper meaning of Torah, they'll appreciate this all the more. Omar Rav Huna, Zamra Denagdi Udabakri Shori. Referring to the issue of music and song, Rav Huna says that the music that's sung by the Nagdi, Nagdi are people that draw boats or barges by using long ropes and walking along the banks of rivers. They sing while they do their work, and that helps them, that gives them strength and increases their work productivity. And Bakri are people that plow with oxen. And while they plow with oxen, they sing as well. And this song has an effect on the animals and enables them to do their job more effectively. So this kind of music, the Zamro, the Nagdi, the Bakri Shori, that is allowed. That we've discussed above the cancellation, the prohibition of song and music. That is not applicable when the music is really a means to another ends. The Gardoi Osir. However, the music that is sung by weavers, Rashi says that's Ela L'schok. That's only for entertainment purposes. It doesn't promote any greater work activity. That is forbidden. Rav Huna Botil Zamra. Rav Huna was diligent in this ruling, and he prohibited song. Chom Meo Avzi Bezuza Umeo Sa'o Chiti Bezuza V'lo Eboi. Notice there's a very interesting connection between a society in which there is no music and the desire of societies for things. For example, here, with his cancellation of prohibition of song, 100 avozi, avoz, type of bird, maybe a goose, you could buy 100 geese for one zuz, and 100 saw, saw is a measure, a dry measure, a mea saw chiti, 100 saw of wheat for one zuz. Very, very cheap, and veloi boy, and even with that, people didn't want. There was no desire for anything. Also, Rav Chisda, Zalzil Bey, Rav Chisda came along. Let's see, Rav Chisda was younger than Rav Huna, maybe we'll say the next generation. He came along, and Zalzil Bey, you can see the word Zalzil, Zalzel, Zoyl, and Rashi said, Lo Hikpid Limchos Biodem. He wasn't diligent with imposing the song restriction, whereas Rav Huna was concerned with this, with the seeing to it that that song would be prohibited. Rav Chisda took a very lax attitude and didn't protest. As a result, Ibaya Avza Bezuzo Velo Mishtakach, you could seek out one avos for a zuz. Before we spoke about 100 avosim costing one zuz. Here, one increase in increase, a 100-fold increase, and you wouldn't be able to find it. People were, with the song, that increased their appetite and their desire for things. You could even offer a lot of money for one item and not even find it. Omar Rav Yosef. Here we have a diamond to highlight two aspects of song in choral singing. On the side of the Gemara, we have a taknosei, a subtopic heading, / mivneh with a structural note. The word zamri is highlighted, and we noted makelos, noshim, ugvorim. Makelos are choirs, group singing, choral singing, men and women. The Gemara will describe, we'll call this communal or group singing, one group of men and one group of women. And you have song with the lines sung and the chorus, that which is serves as a response to song that's initiated by the other group. So Omar of Yosef, Zamri Gavri V'oni Noshi, where the men initiate the song and the women respond. In order to respond, you have to listen to those who are initiating the song. So what you have here is the women are listening attentively to the men. That's described as pritsusa. Pritsusa, it's a word that we'll have to... How should we translate pritsusa? It's a lack of modesty. It's a certain level of lewdness, of frivolousness. There's a worse situation, Zamri Noshi V'oni Gavri, where the women initiate the song and the chorus is sung by the men. In other words, they have to listen attentively to the women singing Ke'esh B'ne'uris. That's like fire in tinder. The desire, the Yetzihara, is inflamed. There's a Rashi makes reference to the Gemara in Brochus that says Kol Beisha Erva, the song, the sweet song and sound of women singing, is considered an aspect of Erva. Erva is the realm of forbidden intimacy. So even though we're not talking about actual physical intimacy, it's related to that realm. So we have a description of men responding to women, and prior to this we saw women responding to the men. The women responding to the men was called pritsusa, and this is called Eish bin Uris. Lamai nafgamina, what practical bearing do these classifications have? If you want to say it's forbidden, it's forbidden. What difference does it make? It makes the following difference. Livtule ha mekami ha. Let's say you're in a rule-making, a decision-making position, but the community in which you're found isn't going to accept your canceling song altogether, this type of communal singing altogether. So you realize that you have some say, but you can't cancel it altogether. So you have to know which is a more serious offense. And that's what the Gemara means when it says the nafkamina, the practical application, is livtuli, is to cancel one in favor of the other. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, kol ha-shoyse ba'arbo'o mine zemer, mevi chomesh pur'onios la'olam. We'll translate this, and the Gemara will base this comment of Rabbi Yochanan on Psukim. Rabbi Yochanan says anyone who drinks, we can assume drinks wine, to the tune of four different kinds of music, four different instruments, brings upon the world five forms of retribution. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Hoy mashkime baboker shechor yirdofu me'achrei banef ba'neshef yayin." Yadli Kain Voyo Tinor Vonovel Toif Vholil Voyayin Mishtam Vespola Shem Lo Yabitu. Without getting involved with the literal translation of the Pasuk is describing those who are drinking a wine to the music of four instruments were mentioned here. You can see we've numbered them off, the Kinor, Nevel, Toif, and Chalil. So, what Maksiv Acharov? What does it say in the next pasuk? Because what we've read so far are psukim in Yeshaya, chapter Hey, psukim Yud Aleph and Yud Beis. What does it say afterwards in pasuk Yud Gimel? Lochein Golo Ami Mibli Das. And as we go on, the next couple lines of the Gemara, we see triangles, and on the side under the Tat Nosei, we have the following kol ha-shoyse b'dalad mine zemer, maybe the triangles are hey mine punishes. Each one of these highlights the onset of another form of punishment. So the drinking of wine while listening to the music brings upon the world, it brings upon the Jewish people exile. That was from Pasuk Yud Gimel, Lochein Golo Ami Mibli Das. The pasuk continues to say uchvoidoi mesei ra'av. Well, what do we see from here? Shemevim ra'av le'olam. That's a second form of punishment. Ra'av is famine. 3. Vahamono tzichei tzoma shegormin l'torah shetishtakach mi lomdeha. The translation of the pasuk has to do with causing the masses to be parched with thirst. The Torah is often compared to mayim, compared to water. And the pasuk referring to thirst is a reference to the causing of Torah learning to be forgotten from those who study it. Vayishach Adam vayishpal ish. That's a fourth point. Shegormin shiflus l'soinu shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Here we have a euphemism. They're causing a lowliness to the Almighty. And in this pasuk we just read, Vayishach Adam Vayishpal Ish. The word Ish, V'ein Ish Elo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayishpal, Los Shiflus is lowliness. Shenema Hashem Ish Milchomo. In that pasuk you see the word Ish used as a reference to the Almighty. So that drinking the wine with all of this, with along with this music, causes a lowering of the esteem that the Almighty has in this world. V'ene gvoyim tishapalna shigormim shiflus shel Yisrael. It causes the lowering, the denigration of the Jewish people. Uma ksiv acharav. What does it say afterwards? Pasuk Yud Dalid. Lochein, and we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Hirchiva Shoil Nafsha, Ufara Pia Livli Choik, Vayerid Hadora, Vahamona, Ushaona, Violeis Ba. After, actually, let's look at Rashi at the top. Rashi, again, you'll note, is in two columns, so we're looking at Rashi in the top. On top line, Yechiva Shol Nafsha Liachar Sheviu Chomish Bonus Halal Lolam Sofa Noflin BeGehenim. After the five forms of retribution were described, eventually they then fall into purgatory. The pasuk we read, Yechiva Shoil. Shoil is one of the names of purgatory. So entrance to purgatory and its mouth wide and open, and hence the culmination of all of these problems is eventually descent into purgatory. Mishemesu Neviim Horishonim, we saw in the Mishnah Botlu Urim Vetumim, the miraculous Kohen Gadol breastplate, its miraculous reaction to questions posed to it, that stopped. Man Neviim Horishonim, who are the first prophets? Omar Avuna Ze David Ushmuel Ushlomo. It's a reference to the beginning of the time in history that immediately preceded the building of the first Beis Hamikdash. The Nevi'im referred to are David, Shmuel, and Shlomo. Rav Nachman Omar Bimei David in the time of David Amel, Zimnin Solik, Vizimnin Lo Solik. Sometimes it worked. Solik literally means it went up. It means it they had success. They were answered when questions were posed to the breastplate of the high priest. And we mentioned that before there were letters on it, and the letters would react, spelling out words. It worked, and sometimes it didn't. Sharei, in the time of David, Shoal Tzadok v'Olsolo, Shoal of Yosef v'Olsolo. David posed question, that is, when Tzadok and Avyosser, these are names of Kehanim Gedolim. And so David posed questions to Tzadok and it reacted. And he asked Avyosser, who was the Kohen Gadol right before Tzadok, and it didn't react. Shenemar Vayal Avyosser. This posuk is a reference to Avyosser being removed from the office of Kohen Gadol when David perceived that he no longer had the divine presence upon him, which was manifest by the lack of reaction of the Urim V'Tumim, the Kohen Gadol breastplate. Mosiv, and when we mentioned before that Avyosser preceded Tzadok, and at that point in time, so Tzadok became his replacement. You can see we have a new marking scheme. On the side, under the Mivneh heading, the triangle are Kushios, These represent questions. Mekoros she mehem royim de urim v'tumim tifkedu gam li'achar tkufas Shlomo Melech. We're going to see sources that indicate that the Urim V'Tumim remained effective even after the time of Shlomo HaMelech, which is contrary to what Rav Huna explained. Mosiv Rabo Bar Shmuel Vahi L'Droish Elakim Bimei Zechariah HaMevin B'Ois Elakim. Now, Zechariah is a time considerably later than the time period mentioned by Rav Huna. And you see, the Pasuk says they consulted the Almighty in the time of Zechariah, and what does it mean they consulted? My lav, b'urim v'tumim, does it not mean that they sought out responses from the Urim v'tumim? Lo, the Nevi'im. Doesn't mean that they sought out the Almighty's response through the Urim v'tumim, rather through prophets. Toshma, Mishachorav Beis HaMikdash Rishon, Botlu, Orei Migrosh, Uposku, Urim V'tumim, Uposak, Melech Mibeis David. We've just seen the main problem. It says here, upon the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Botlu, Orei Migrosh. Orei Migrosh is a reference to the cities designated to the Levium, which according to the Torah law, they had areas, belts around the city that were left uncultivated, were left vacant. So this is a reference to those laws. But with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that stopped. Now the dashed underlining highlights what's important for us, and it says here that the Urim V'Tumim stopped. So we see that the Urim V'Tumim continued quite a bit later than the time that Rav Huna assigned to it. What else? The monarchy from the House of David, the Davidic dynasty, stopped. Of course, we know, according to our tradition, it's not a permanent cessation. We refer to the Moshiach as being Moshiach ben David, a descendant from the House of David. But for the meantime, for quite a long time, the Davidic dynasty as a source of kings, that stopped with the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. V'im lachshav onam lomar v'yomar hartir shosulem asher lo yochlu mikodesh hakodoshim ad amoid kohen l'urim v'tumim. You might challenge what we said from this pasuk. This pasuk, the Tirshasa, is a reference to the time period. It was a specific individual. I believe it was Nehemiah or possibly Daniel. Forgive me for my doubt concerning this point, but in his time, he said to them, "There will be no eating of the Kodesh HaKodoshim, of holy, sanctified food, until the Kohen comes forward with the Urim V'Tumim." So what we're supposed to see from here is that it seems that the Urim V'Tumim would function in this second temple period, because the pasuk from Ezra is actually at that transition point from the end of the Babylonian exile into the second temple period. So you might say that this pasuk presents a challenge to our claim that the Urim V'Tumim stopped at the time of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Well, and more low, you can say back to him, when the pasuk says ad amod kohen l'Urim V'Tumim, it doesn't mean until the kohen gadol appears in the second Beis HaMikdash with Urim V'Tumim, but rather ke'odom shoyim lechaver ad shiyichu meisim v'yovo Moshiach ben David. It's an expression that says that they're not going to resume the consumption of the kodesh kadoshim until the Moshiach comes, until the resurrection of the dead. It's an expression indicating sometime way in the future, not something immediate. So with upon reading this source, though, you see that the Urim V'Tumim continued till the end of the first Beis HaMikdash. How can Rav Huna therefore explain that the Mishnah that says with the death of the Nevi'im Rishonim there was no longer Urim V'Tumim, and say that's a reference to David, Shmuel, and Shlomo? It continued way after that, all through the first temple period, a total of 410 years. Elo Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, Man Nevi'im Rishonim. The Mishnah says that with the death of the Nevi'im Rishonim, no more Urim V'Tumim. That term, Nevi'im Rishonim, Lafuke Michagai Zechariah Malachi de Achronim Ninu. It is, in fact, a reference to all of the prophets up till these last three prophets who, in fact, lived into the Second Temple period. Therefore, throughout the entire period of prophecy, which coincided with the first Beis HaMikdash, the Urim V'Tumim functioned until they died, the Nevi'im Rishonim, leaving the Nevi'im Achronim, as described here as the Chagai Zechariah Malachi. At that point already, the Urim V'Tumim stopped functioning. Tetonu Rabbanan. And here we have a reference to the these prophets in light of what we've said. Mishemesu Chagai Zechariah Malachi, when they died, Nistalka Ruach HaKadosh Mishrael, the divine spirit departed from Israel. When we speak about Ruach HaKadosh, we're talking about a level of knowledge, of understanding that is similar to maybe a slightly lower level than actual prophecy, but with their death, Ruach HaKadosh ceased. V'afal b'kein hoyu mishtamshim bebaskoil. Nevertheless, there was still a divine method of discovery of information called baskol, the heavenly voice. Baskol is, as you can see from context, is something less than a lesser form of divine revelation than Ruach HaKodesh, but nevertheless it existed. Shepa machas hoyu mesubin b'aliyas beis guria b'yericho. There was on an occasion the rabbis had been assembled in the aliyah's a second story, an attic of Beis Guria in Yericho, name of a city. Nosnalem basko min hashamayim v'yomro. A heavenly voice came forth and announced, Yesh bochem odem echot shiroi shetashra shchina olav. There is a man amongst you that is of such lofty spirit that he deserves to have the divine presence upon him. Hello? Well, why doesn't he have this Hashreya Shechina upon him? Shein Doro Roi Lekach. The generation in which he lives isn't deserving of it. So who was that special person? Nosnu Enem B'Hilal HaZokein. So those assembled that heard this baskol, they looked upon Hilal HaZokein. He was the one that was deserving of having the divine presence upon him. Ukshemes, and when Hillel died, Hispidu, they eulogized as follows. Hey Chosid, hey is like the we say, whoa. Hey Chosid, hey Onov, Chosid being the pious one, hey Onov, the humble one, Talmido Shel Ezra, the student. It's many generations later, but nevertheless he's considered a student of Ezra. Ezra, of course, was the leader of the Jewish people at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash period. Veshuv pam achas. Again, we're progressing here further generationally. And on another occasion, hoy mesubin balio biyavne. Yavne is the name of a place. And nosnu aleim baskoil min hashamayim v'yomro lohem yesh bochem odom echot shiroi shetashre shchina olav elo she'ein doro zakoyin lekach. As we saw just before, it happened again later, and who was the individual that was deserving, that was, let's say, qualified to have the Shechina upon him? Nosnoim b'Shmuel HaKotan. Ukshemes, and when Shmuel HaKotan died, his Hispidu, they eulogized, Hey Onov, Hey Chosid. interesting. The order here is just the reverse of what we saw before. Hey Chosid, Hey Onov. Here we have Hey Onov, Hey Chosid, Talmido, Shel Hillel. V'af hu, Omar b'shas misaso. Shmuel Koton, upon his death, he said prophetically, Shimon v'yishmoel l'charba. This is a reference to some of our, what we refer to as the Asore Haruge Malchus, and he refers to them by name. Shimon is a reference to Rabbon Shimon, who was the Nosi, who was the leader of the people. And Yishmael is a reference to Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, who was a Kohen Gadol, and who was killed by the Gentile empire of their time. Rashi says, Shaharogsom Malchus Yavon. I find that curious. Yavon is a reference to the Greek Empire, but historically, we would assume it was the Roman Empire at the time. But it's often explained that Rome was, in a sense, a continuity, certainly philosophically and culturally, of Yavon. So the fact that Rashi makes reference to Malchus Yavon killing them, I wouldn't say that is necessarily a contradiction to the reality of the fact that Rome was in power. The Chavroi Lukatla and their colleagues also to be killed. Charba, with regard to Shimon and Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, they were killed by the sword. And Katla, other forms of death. And Rashi enumerates, Rashi says, he cites Rabbi Akiva, whose flesh was combed off with steel combs while he was alive. And he died that way. Rabbi Hananiah ben Trajan, he was burnt with a Sefer Torah. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Bova, he was pierced by spears. Ushar Amo Labiza. Shmuel Koton continues with his prophecy, and the rest of the nation will be plundered. The Orkon Sagian Asin Lemesi Al Amo. Orkon are troubles, Sagian, many, many troubles will befall the Jewish people. The Af Al Rabbi Yehuda ben Bova Bikshu Lomar Hey Chosid Hey Onav. We referred to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bova just a moment ago by noting Rashi comments on him. He too was one of such lofty spirit that they wanted to eulogize him. Ela shenitra fosha she'ein maspidim al haruge malchus. It was a time of great danger, and that's what nitra fosha means. There was a fear of the kingdom, and therefore they didn't eulogize him out of fear of being caught by the authorities. Mishchorav beis hamikdash botel ha-shomir v'chulei. Tonu rabbonon. Shomir shebo bono Shlomo es beis hamikdash. The shomir, will discover, here was a creature that had some type of what's called power. What the nature of the power was it some type of physical secretion of fluid or some other kind of power? But in this power that the Shomir had, this very small creature had, was that when you would place it on a very hard surface, when you would place it on rock, it was capable of carving into the rock, of etching into the rock, of even splitting rock without the loss of any actual material. The Shomir, through which Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, Shenemar, the Pasuk says, V'abayis b'hibonoysu evin Shlomo Maso Nivne, Hadvorim k'ksovam, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. The Pasuk says that when Shlomo HaMelech built the Bayis, the Beis HaMikdash, so he built it with stones that were complete. They were, we'll say, unchiseled. Rashi explains Dvarim Kiksavim Kimashmon, Evan Shlemo Maso, Kimosh Yesio Minahar, Velo Sititua, Shuv Bekli Barzel. They were stones as they were taken from the quarry. they were not subjected to any further chiseling. Omar lo Rabbi Nehemia, v'chi efshir lomar kein. Can you say like you are saying? Falo kfar nemar, the pasuk says kol eila avonim yikoros megurros b'megera. Pasuk describes the stones as being chiseled with a megera, a type of implement used for cutting stone. Im kein ma tomud lomar lo nishma bevayas bibonoso. Well, if Rabbi Nehemia is correct, then what does it mean that no sound was heard? Namely, no metallic sound, cutting rocks, was heard while the house was being built. So he explains, "Shoyim mesaken mi bachutz umachnis mi bifnim." Before, the bachutz means outside, that there was chiseling, but outside the Har HaBayis, not on the Temple Mount. When they reached the Temple Mount, so there was no more chiseling of stones. Up till this point, you can see that the Shomir had a role according to Rabbi Yehuda. Stones were hewn from the quarry, but from that point on, there was no metal, no implements were used for shaping or cutting the stones. What therefore enabled the stones taken from the quarry to be used in building upright walls of the Beis HaMikdash? So Rabbi Yehuda will tell you that it was the Shomir. It was used to shape the stones, cut the stones into the desired building material that it was. Rabbi Nehemia doesn't say that. He says that metal implements were used. As far as the pasuk indicating that no sound was heard while the building took place, that is true once the stones arrived at the site of the Beis HaMikdash. And as we just read in the Gemara, Shem Mesaken Mibachutz, whatever shaping needed to be done took place outside. Umachnis Mibifnim, and then bring it inside. Omar Rebbe, Nirin Divrei Rebbe Yehuda, Ba'avnei Mikdosh, V'Divrei Rebbe Nehemia, Ba'avnei Beiso. We didn't elaborate on the psukim that were cited here, but the pasuk that Rebbe Nehemia cited was not necessarily a pasuk referring to the building of the Beis HaMikdash proper, but rather to the royal palace. So the resolution, according to Rebbe, is that with regard to the stones of the Beis HaMikdash, so there was no sound heard. With regard to the stones of the palace, so then noise and implements were used. Noise was heard through the implements that were used to shape the stones. The Rabbi Nehemia Shomir Lamayo. So according to Rabbi Nehemia, what was the role of the Shomir? He, according to Rabbi Nehemia, the stones were cut to shape, just not on location. Answer, Miboya Le Lichdesanya. Rabbi Nehemia will employ the Shomir in the following. This is a this source deals with the stones of the Kohen Gadol, that he wore shoulder stones and breastplate stones, and these stones had words etched into them, names of the tribes and other words. Avonim halolu ein kosvin oison bidyo. The writing that was on these stones was not done with ink. In other words, just to use ink to draw on the stones, the letters, the words, and leave it just like that. Mishum shenemar, the pasuk says, pituchei choisom. That expression means carved, etched out. V'ein mesartin aleihem v'izmel. Nor can you etch out the letters with an izmel, a tool, a type of chisel, a stylus that's used for etching into stone. Mishum shenemar b'miluosam means complete, without any loss. When you chisel away at stone, so the the fragments, the stone fragments, represent a loss in the original stone. So you couldn't have chiseling either. Ella, what would be done? Kosev aleihem bidyo. In fact, ink was used initially for outlining the letters. Umare lohen shomir mibachutz. Vehein nivkois me'alein. The shomir, then, this creature, what it looked like exactly is not, we don't have an illustration over here, but it was very small, and it was directed over the letters, and after the shomer walked over the letters, so then the stone would crack on its own. Like a fig in the summer season, it dries, it cracks, and there's no loss of material. And this is a description of the earth when during the rainy season it cracks, but there's no loss in the actual substance. Tanu Rabbanan, Shomir ze brioso kisaora. The shomir, it's brioso literally means it's creation. It could also be a reference to as it is. It is a creature, like the word a beria, is the size of a barley grain. Umisheshis yemebreshis nivra, and it was created at the time of creation. V'ein kol dover kosha yochol lamud b'fonav. If the shomir is, say, encased in something hard, it won't withstand it. So how do you preserve the shomir if you can't lock it in an iron vault? It'll just go right through it. So how do you preserve it? You wrap it in wool, in clumps of wool, and the wool being of soft material, so that won't arouse the shomir to do anything, and that way it will be protected within this soft material. And then, once wrapped in the wool, it's placed in a lead tube, a lead container that's filled with the barley grain subin, or the peel. It's the bran or the peel that's around the barley grain. My understanding is that would be at the shomer's food supply. Omar Rebbe Ami, Mishachorov Mikdosh Rishon, Botlo Shiro Franda, Uzuchis Levona. With the destruction of the Beis HaMikdosh, there ceased to be Shiro Franda is a type of fabric. Rashi explains on the fourth line from the top, Shira Frando min Meshihu, a type of silk. And also Zechuchis Levono, a type of white or clear glass. Tanyona Mihochi, Mishachor Besa, by Mikdash Rishon, Botla, Shira Frando, Zechuchis Levono, Verechev Barzel. Botla literally means it ceased. It could also mean that it was prohibited to benefit from these things as a sign of mourning concerning the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And these were entities or elements of opulence, and Rechev Barzel, some type of, I'll say, iron means of travel, means of transportation. A Rechev is a chariot. V'yesh omrim af yayin korush habo mishnir hadoima ki'igule dvela. And also was botel, also there ceased this very thick kind of wine. Yayin korush, korush is congealed wine that came from Shneer. Shneer is a location, if I'm not mistaken, in the northern part of, to the north of Israel. And it was so thick, it was doime, it was similar to k'igule dvela, like fig cakes. The neufis sufim, we also mentioned that stopped. My neufis sufim. Omar Rav, and on the side of the Gemara, we have the diamond marking explained by the Nosei / Mivneh heading. Deos b'mau noifesufim, different opinions as to what that is. So Rav says soilus shitzofa al gabi napo. Soilus is a flour. It's a good quality flour. And what used to be is that it was very rich. It had a lot of oils in it, and it would stick to the sides of a sifter. The flour itself was almost like dough, and it was that stopped, and hence the term noifes sufim. The word noifes is associated with a napa, a sifter, and it was a tzofa. Literally is something that floats. It means it would stick, it would stay above in the sifter. And it was similar to dough kneaded with honey and oil. So it's a description of a very rich type of flour. The Levi Omar, Levi says, what was nofa sufim? Shtei kikros hanidbokas betanur. It was a situation where there was there was brucha in people's food, and what's described here are two loaves that as dough, the loaves are attached or stuck onto the sides of an oven, and the tofchos, they would expand ubois ad shemagio zulazu, so that you would take clumps of dough. Let's say relatively small clumps of dough, but because of the bracha that used to exist before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, they would expand so much that they would come together and end up touching one another. And Rashi describes the term noifes tzufim let's look at Rashi together in the narrow upper part of the narrow line. Shtei kukros hanidbokes v'chulei. There was bracha, there was plenty that was found in their dough. When they would stick dough, loaves of dough, to the sides of their ovens, each clump of dough on opposite walls of the oven, they would expand, and a French word appears, ad shemagas penei zu lazu, and the next word, according to the Rashash, should read kenof. Nof is a branch of a tree. Kenof, and hence the relationship to the word nofes tzufim, kenof ze shegodel umispashe v'holech v'toyle b'avir, just like a branch of a tree grows and grows, and it's suspended over in air, in mid-air. The branch is coming out from the side of the trunk of the tree, and hence it's in mid-air. Kein elu, so too these loaves, tzafos utfuchos b'avir, they would expand and appear as if they're floating in mid-air with just their ends attached to the oven walls. We continue in the Gemara, a third explanation of what's nofes tzufim. For Yeshua ben Levi Omar, ze dvash abo min hatzifya. Another gear says min hatzofim. It's honey that comes from tzofim. Tzofim is actually a mountain. It's Rashi seems to explain that it's not a specific mountain. We are familiar with maybe Har HaTzofim, which is a mountain near Jerusalem. But Rashi says, Hahorim Hagvoim, high mountains, Shemisham Tzofil Merochok. When you're on a mountain, so you have visibility at to great distances. So, Nofes Tzufim is a reference to honey that comes from mountains. The Gemara continues, My Mashma, where do you see a reference to honey as coming from mountains? There's a girsa that says Rav Yosef, as Rav Yosef explains the pasuk. Now here there's a reference to the pasuk of Dvarim, Perek Aleph, pasuk Mem Daled. Metargem means the Aramaic rendition of this pasuk. So on the side of the Gemara we've included the pasuk which says, "Vayetze Amori Hayoshev Bahar Ahu Likraschem Vayedefu Eschem Kasher Taseno Hadvarim." Vayaksu eschem b'seir ad chorma. So regarding this pasuk, where Yosef explains, "Kama denatzon debraisa v'shaiton berume alma," like debraisa or devora. Maybe you see the similarity in the words. Bees, as bees spurt forth and fly in the rume alma, in the skies of the world. Umasyon duvsha meisvei tura, and this is dashed underlined for our purposes. Then they bring honey from the growth from the grasses of the mountains. Hence, you see a reference in the pasuk to honey originating in mountains. Tanan hasam. We Gemara brings a halachic source regarding conduct of tuma. If you have a vessel from which you're pouring contents into a lower vessel, pouring, let's say, liquid into a lower vessel, and the lower vessel is defiled, the upper vessel is undefiled, is tohor, does the stream that's formed when you're pouring the contents of the upper vessel downwards, does that stream form a connection? And if it does form a connection, that means the lower vessel, which is defiled, will cause the contents in the upper vessel to also become defiled because of the connection. So the source says, "Kol ha-nitzok tohor, chutz midvash zifim v'hatzapichim." Nitzok is what we describe, the flow. Flows are not considered a connection, with the exception of dvash zifim and sapichim. We take a look at the Rashi before going on to explain what dvash zifim and sapichim are. Rashi says, about a little more than halfway down the Rashi column, chutz midvash zifim shu arv mod. It's very thick. It's true. It's not a solid, but it's a very thick liquid. Veharei hu kimechubar. When this is poured out from the upper vessel into the lower vessel, it's almost like a solid connection. It's as if the lower vessel is now attached to that which is above. She kishakiluach posek hu holech milamato lamalo. When you, let's say, stop the pouring, so it's so thick that it springs back, so that which was touching the lower vessel springs back upwards. So that which was touching the lower vessel became tame, and it springs back upwards, thereby causing tuma to that which is in the upper vessel. So we continue in the Gemara. My zifim, dvash zifim. Dvash is honey. Zifim, honey. What is that? What is that? Omar Rav Yochanan, dvash shemezifin bo. It's honey that, since it's so thick, you can, the zayef is used often in the context of forgery, of fraud. This honey is so thick that you can actually add water and wine to it, and you'll thereby increase the volume of honey that you have, but the public won't perceive that you added to it, that you diluted it, because it is so thick to begin with. So zifim, from the word lezayef, type, as we said, an element of fraudulence. Rabbi Shlokish Omar al Shem Mekomo, the word zifim is simply the name of a place. It's thick honey that comes from zifim. Kedichtiv, the Pasuk says, in this Pasuk enumerates names of places. Zif, v'telem u'b'orlois. Kayotze badover atomer. Similarly, it says, bevo hazifim vayomru l'sha'ul halo David v'chulei, my zifim. In this Pasuk, says the zifim came and they informed Shaul concerning David HaMelech. Shaul was in pursuit of David, and they informed Shaul, my zifim. Who are the zifim? Amr b'yochanan b'nei adam ha'mezayfim divrim. People that are liars. Notice the similarity to what Rabbi Yochanan said just before. The vashtim is eifin, fraudulent. Rabbi Lozer, here we don't have Rish Lakish, but we have Rabbi Lozer, says, Omer al-Shem Mekomon. The zifim that came to Shaul is a reference to people from that place. Kirichtiv zif v'telem u'ba'olois. U'posku anshe amona. Omar Rabbi Yitzchok, Elu b'nei Odom, Shehein ma'aminim b'kodesh Baruch Hu. We often hear the term emuna, ne'emon, ma'amin. Here we're going to dissolve into a fine resolution of that word. Rashi says, Shema'aminim b'kodesh Baruch Hu, levater mamonim l'noi hidur mitzvah, l'tztoku l'itzah shabosos v'yamim tovim. People who are readily willing to spend their money for the purchase of mitzvah items, for hiddur mitzvah. Hiddur is the glorification of the mitzvah, embellishment, beautification. There are mitzvah items like an esrog and lulav for sukkis, a sefer Torah, tefillin, mezuzahs. All of these are mitzvah articles. These are people that are willing to spend more for a more beautiful mitzvah article. And they're willing to spend more, and they're not worried, they're not concerned that this is going to come at the expense of their own daily financial maintenance. They trust in the Almighty, that He will provide for them. And by their spending for noi mitzvah, or charity, or expenditures for Shabbos and Yom Tov, they do so with grace and open-handedness, and not be fearful that this is going to come at the expense of their own daily income, their own maintenance. That's Anshei Amona. The Sanya Reb Elazar Agov Lomer, Kol Mi Sheyesh Lo Pas Besalo V'Yomer Ma Ochal L'Mochor. Anyone who has bread in his basket. That's a description of someone that has enough to get by today. So he has enough to get by today. And he says, what am I going to eat tomorrow? In other words, if I eat everything that I have, which is enough to get me through the day, I'll have nothing left for tomorrow. Well, anyone who is concerned with that and says, what am I going to eat tomorrow? Einu elo mekatnei amona. They are of small faith. This is a very, very high level of reliance upon the Almighty. And it comes as no surprise that for many, many hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years, we don't find this certainly on a massive, popular level. There might very well be individuals here and there, but as far as what the Gemara is communicating is that from the time of the Churban Habayis, these kind of people stopped to be. V'hainu d'omer Reb Elazar, my dichtiv mi ki mi boz liyoim katnus. What? That's a pasuk, and Reb Elazar explains mi goram latzadikim. Notice the Gemara uses the word tzadikim. Tzadikim are righteous individuals, and yet it says who causes the tzadikim she is bazbeis shulchanon leosid lavo for them to experience a loss. Bizbuz is a word referring to loss from their shulchan, their tables in the world to come. In other words, people have through their merits they accrue a portion, they earn reward in the world to come. However, that reward is described here as diminished. And who are we talking about? The reward of the righteous will end up being reduced or diminished in the world to come. What causes that? Katnus shehoyo bohen shelo heeminu b'kodesh baruch hu. This lack of faith. Now here one would commit a travesty if he were just to translate the Gemara and saying they didn't believe in God. That's not at all what we're referring to. But they didn't have this very high level of faith and reliance to the extent that they weren't concerned even with what they'll eat tomorrow. So this, this level of this lack of high level of faith causes a diminishing. I wouldn't say a great amount is diminished. After all, we are describing tzaddik, and people are very righteous, but nevertheless, they haven't reached this. They don't reach this pinnacle of faith, and that causes a diminution in amount of reward in the world to come. Rava, he has a different take on this pasuk of ki mi boz liyom katnus. Rava says, Rava Omar, elu katne b'nei rishi Yisrael. This katnus is a reference to the children of the wicked. Wicked Jews. Their children. The Gemara continues at the top of Memtes. Shemivazvazin din avihem laosid lavo. Here we must rely on Rashi at the top line. Shemivazvazin din avihem korim din avihem. Their children, the children of the wicked, can end up tearing the judgment of punishment due to their fathers. Shekishiboyin ludunam, when the heavenly court comes to judge the wicked, omrim lefonav, these children of the wicked say as follows. And before we go on in the Gemara, you'll see from the context of the Gemara that we're describing a situation where there were wicked people, but they had children, and their children died young. They died as minors, as infants, as little kids. This phenomenon actually, as it's true, it's a tragedy when a child dies, and here we're describing the children of wicked individuals. These children in the heavenly court say as follows: Omrim lefonov, Ribbono shel olam, me'achashata osid lipora mehen. Since you're going to be punishing our fathers because of their wickedness, lomo hikisa shineim bom. Rashi says on the second line from the top, hikisa shineim, lomo he'evaltam v'tzeartem olenu b'moisenu v'nifrato. Mehem b'chayehem. If you're going to punish them anyway in the world to come, so why in this world did they have to suffer our loss and become mourners because of our death? So what's the bottom line here? So through the claim of these children in front of the heavenly throne, they're saying basically, you know, our fathers, they were wicked, but they paid. They were punished through our death. Therefore now, in the world to come, in the heavenly court, our fathers should be spared of further punishment. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.